Welcome to the Muscle Expert Podcast with Ben Pakulski, one of the world's top professional bodybuilders, an expert on human performance and mindset mastery. Ben dives deep to deliver the strategies of the top experts to upgrade your body, mind, muscle, strength, performance, biochemistry, and how to become the upgraded modern man. Join us on BenPakulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.
Hey, welcome back. Muscle Expert Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Pakulski, and you're about to listen to a podcast with Bobby Maximus, a ex-UFC world champion jiu-jitsu wrestler who's not only an awesome fighter, but as an awesome human being who's doing great things to impact our world and positively influence all of the people that come into his space. So Bobby's written a book called Maximus Body with Men's Health that gives you massive insight into the psychology of success, the psychology of a world-class UFC fighter, and just how to program and approach your gym time to maximize all of your outputs. So as a fighter, obviously, you're going to have many different types of stimulus, many different types of training. Bobby's going to go deep on all this stuff. And in our podcast, we actually talk a lot about the psychology of success. And he gives me actually one of the best strategies that I've ever heard on overcoming negative self-talk. And we are all guilty of that at some point. Either you're able to transcend it and you become successful, or it becomes your nemesis and holds you back from achieving the things you want to achieve. So if you want to learn how to overcome your limiting self-talk, I highly suggest you listen to this episode and listen right to the end, because Bobby gives you some pretty good insights right at the end. You know how that always works, is our conversations at the beginning are superficial, and then we really start to get into some deep stuff at the end. So enjoy. Yeah, man, I love what you're doing online. You're doing awesome stuff to inspire and teach, and people love seeing your work ethic and your attitude. Are you writing books? Like, I see you doing, like, The Commandments. Is that one thing that's kind of on your radar right now, writing a book?
Yeah, the big book I wrote a book called Maximus Body for Men's Health.
Yeah.
Which has done really, really well. And so that was my first book. And then the rest of the stuff, I've been kind of keeping a future book in mind, but a lot of it, to be honest with you, has just been focused on getting a lot of really good online content up.
Good for you. So the things you do every day, or not every day, but often, is like the whatever, the commandments or whatever. Keep doing that, man, because people are going to eat that shit up.
Thank you.
Yeah, people love that. Like, you'd write on the whiteboard, chapter this, verse this. Yep. Honestly, people will attach to that. If you can come up with one of those every day, you'll build your following very, very, very fast.
Yeah, and so I've been saving them up. Like, I've got like a whole master list, and I've actually got a book of Bobby Maximus. Like, yep. I decided to buy like a leather book and like write it in calligraphy and stuff. And yep. So at some point I'll do something with it. But right now, like I said, it's just online tends to be such a good medium versus an old fashioned book, you know? So
That being said, man, like the book market right now is really having an upward swing, because nobody will throw a book away. And if someone buys your book, man, for the rest of their life, you're their authority. So I really think, you know, a book for you, I mean, I'd buy a book from you, man. If you put out a book on like your hardest workouts, how to become a better athlete, because you're well-rounded, because you've got good stuff. Like, I'm always looking in the fitness industry, man, we lack people who are good people, who are really working hard and putting out great motivational principles. Yep. You know, as much as you think there's a lot of them, there's not a lot of good ones.
Yeah, and that's true, and that's what the Maximus Body is about. I mean, it's got 100 workouts in it, it's got a full training program, and then it's got a bunch of mental stuff in it too, because the sports psychology is probably the biggest thing I focus on, or the biggest thing I do.
Amazing, man. So who are you working with now? Like, are you just spending all your time focusing on your jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so I focus a lot of time on my jits. I work with a couple of guys here named Suyan and Carlos, who are both world champions. So I really lucked out in finding them. And then in terms of training, I train myself in terms of like the actual physical in the gym side of things. And that's one thing I would love to be – I'd love to be closer to you. I'd love to live closer to a guy like Branch Warren, who's a friend. He's become a friend. I'd love to live closer to Joe DeFranco, but I find like a lot of us are so scattered all over the place. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of research online, notice what other people are doing, try things. I formed a really good relationship with Westside Barbell, mm-hmm. which has been great for me. My garage now has more Westside equipment in it than I know what to do with.
I saw that. That's good, man.
So it's pretty cool.
Good for you. What's your objective for as far as training right now? So, what does it look like day to day?
Day to day, I'm putting probably 4 to 5 hours in a day, split between weights and jujitsu stuff. It's not the optimal program for what I'll call true fight training. A lot of people don't understand that when you're a sports specific athlete, the sport's got to come first.
Of course.
Like everyone likes to spend a lot of time in the weight room, but to be truthful with you, if I was only focused on jujitsu, I'd probably only do 2 sessions a week in the weight room and then the rest jujitsu. But another big part of my job is the online generating content, looking good, being able to deadlift, being able to bench press, being able to run, being well-rounded at a bunch of different things. And because I cross different markets, like I'm relatable to the CrossFit athlete, but also the bodybuilding athlete, I've got to be good at a bunch of different things. And so I spend a lot more time in the gym than I'd actually probably like to right now. But part of that is just part of the job.
So walk me down like your journey here, man. So you just came out of the UFC and you decided you're going to take up more jiu-jitsu. What does your training do? Like I'd be curious from someone who's not a jiu-jitsu expert, what did you have to start doing to really ramp up your jiu-jitsu, like specifics?
Okay, so specifically, the first thing people don't understand is how technical a sport jiu-jitsu is or how technical a sport ultimate fighting is. I would look at them and it's the same. You can take the most fit guy in the world, whatever your definition of fitness is. You take a guy like Matt Frazier or Rich Froning, who arguably is the fittest guy from a GPP perspective, mm-hmm. or you take a world-class strongman like Eddie Hall, or you take one of the best bodybuilders in the world, they're not going to win a fight. It's no just sense. A fight to fight. Yeah. On the other hand, you look at a guy like Roy Nelson, who's in Bellator, who's one of the best heavyweight fighters out there, but he doesn't have a good physique and he's not that fit from a cardiovascular standpoint or a weightlifting standpoint.
Right.
And where he wins is on his technique. And so technique's related to a couple of things. The first thing I'd say for me is weight. I actually like to walk around 260. I'm bigger. I feel better about myself. I'm really, really strong. But from a jiu-jitsu standpoint, it slows me down.
Sure.
It ends up being a negative. I actually find that my body works best at around 235. And so I started altering my training in the gym a little bit away from hypertrophy type work, a little bit away from like the raw strength type work, and doing more cardiovascular type work and more what I'll call a blanket term for strength endurance in the body weight realm. So push-ups, pull-ups, dips, body weight squats, body weight lunges, burpees, burpee pull-ups, circuits of that nature,
which help
really, I mean, they promote lightness in the body. Like they promote you carrying a lower body weight. And so that's where most of my work now has focused to facilitate the jiu-jitsu. And then in jiu-jitsu, I let the sport take care of itself to a degree. Like I work on my technique there, but I also do sparring there and fighting. So I do a lot of cardiovascular work there as well.
Give me some ideas of what jiu-jitsu training would look like. When you say technique, for someone who doesn't know anything about jiu-jitsu, which I'm going to guess a lot of my listeners are probably that way, what does that mean? Like walk me down a typical day if you don't mind.
So classes are an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending – you know, kind of what we're learning, how we're feeling, what we're doing. It's kind of fluid.
So you're in class, you're not doing one-on-one stuff?
No, I'm in a class. It's one of those things where I could probably do one-on-one with the instructor, but there are so many different body types in the sport. It helps to experience them all because I'm not just going to get the same body type when I go to a competition.
Yep.
Some guys are really tall and skinny. Some guys are really short and big. Like at the World Championships, there was a guy in my category who was 6'6" and 250 pounds.
Yep.
There was another guy that was 5'9" and 300 pounds.
Oh wow.
So it just changes how you play the sport.
Right.
So the first 45 minutes to an hour is technical work, like practicing moves, practicing different things. And then the last half of the class would be 5 to 6 minute sparring sessions. And so you and I would go for 5 minutes, we'd rest a minute. I'd go against somebody else for 5 minutes, we'd rest a minute, and then you kind of run through the class like that.
Okay, so technique stuff, is it mostly like throws and clutching? Like, give me an idea.
Yeah, so the wrestling part of it, that's more throws and clinching. We focus on mostly the ground stuff, so fighting from your back or being on top position in a dominant position. And so every day there's a different move the instructor will teach us that we'll go through. And it's actually – I'm a big proponent of – there's sometimes it's a really beginner move, but working on your basics is probably the best thing you can do even for an expert. And so there's not one class I've ever taken that doesn't help. Even if it's something I'm not good at or I don't like, it helps me work on my weaknesses, which I believe is a huge part of any athlete. I mean, if I was to give anyone any advice ever, it would be make a list of your strengths, make a list of your weaknesses. Don't work on your strengths for 3 months, and then for 3 months, just focus on your weaknesses. And you'd be shocked how many gains you would make. And so with that, I always learn something valuable, something I can use. And even if it's not a move I'm going to use as part of my offense, it helps me learn the defense for it as well.
Right.
So it's really interesting. It's good for my brain. And I always feel too, you know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I always feel it's easier to train with a goal. Like if you know you've got the Olympia coming up, then it's easier to train than versus just training for training's sake.
Man, I mean, you don't know what I'm going through right now, but I've been retired for 12 months, and so I'm trying to lose 100 pounds of muscle, which I know sounds blasphemous, but I have no goal, like other than not being fat. Like I don't really have a goal, so I'm training maybe 3-4 times a week. I'm doing yoga 4 or 5 times a week, but it's really hard to train and not crush it and not have a very specific goal, man. It's like, what am I doing? I mean, I totally get what you're saying. You know, it's a goal is absolutely necessary.
Well, and the guys that have the hardest time with that are guys that have competed at high level. You know, like if you've never competed, I think it's easier. But if you've competed at a high level, it's really hard. You thrive on the pressure. And so without that pressure point of something coming up, it's difficult to train effectively. The one thing I'm blessed with in my job or lucky with in my job is because I want to be a fitness professional and because I teach seminars and do things, there's always a constant pressure there of me trying to prove myself. So if you're one of the best CrossFit athletes in the world and you come to train with me, I've got to be able to do what you can do. Maybe not as good, but I've got to be able to represent myself. And so I've always got that in the back of my mind, which is good. But it'd be nice to have a bit more of a specific goal in the gym.
Completely get you, man. So, you know, you just said you just won the world championships, correct?
Yep.
Who's teaching you and how are they, like, you're obviously best in the world at in your weight class or whatever it is. So when you speak about instructors, what have they done prior to you? Like, who are these guys?
So Carlos Santos is a 3-time world champion in jiu-jitsu and at heavyweight. And so that's perfect for me because heavyweight fighting is a lot different than lightweight fighting. And so he's worked with me a lot and I'm really grateful to have him. It's kind of one of those funny things. I don't know why the guy lives in Salt Lake City, Utah. It's kind of, I just really, really lucked out and he happens to be 10 minutes from my house.
Awesome.
And then there's another guy named Suyan Quiroz that's an amazing jiu-jitsu guy. He's also a multiple time world champion and he weighs about 150 pounds. And so I'm really lucky to have both guys at opposite ends of the spectrum. Suyan still competes a lot too, which is great. So he leads by example. Mm-hmm. And so I'm lucky to have two of the best jiu-jitsu guys on the planet right around the corner from my house. And if they aren't there, honestly, I'm probably not competing.
Wow, good for you. When was the World Championships?
It was in August.
And so you're just a world champion, man. I want to walk through some of the kind of adversities you faced there. Like what are some of the things maybe that happened that you didn't expect? What were some of the biggest challenges you faced in walking all the way through to winning that championship?
You know, funny enough, it's actually outside the gym stuff has been the biggest challenge. The gym stuff's always been easy to me. So I'm a person that believes that hard work can overcome anything. And I've never had a problem showing up and working my ass off for a few hours. That's the easy part. The hard part is trying to balance your life outside the gym. And I'll tell you, one of the best periods of my life, I was 24 years old. I was living in London, Ontario.
Yep.
And I was fighting. And I was bouncing at a club downtown called
– Yep.
I got paid cash under the table. And so really what I did is I bounced Thursday, Friday, Saturday night.
We'll bleep out the name of the place you're working.
Fair enough. But I got paid – when I got paid cash under the table. And it was a really good time in my life because all I had to do was focus on training.
Yeah.
I was training with one of the best kickboxing teams in the world at that point. And my day was just to train. And then the job was frankly easy. I'd eat food and hang out and listen to music. It wasn't that bad at all.
Right.
And I had no life responsibilities. Like, I made enough to cover my rent and like my modest living means. And all I did was focus on the sport. Well, now I've written a book. I've got an online website. I've got to worry about my Instagram. I travel for seminars all over the world. I'm trying to do podcasts. And on top of this, I've got an 8-year-old, a 1-year-old, and a wife. And so the balance is like the stuff outside the gym, it's completely, it's a different animal dealing with that. And so that's the biggest challenge I had, is just trying to find enough time to train and to do everything I got to do and to be able to focus.
Dude, it's funny that we live in this parallel existence, because, you know, when you're 24 years old, I'm sure at the time you were probably stressed. You weren't making more money. You're like, oh man, I wish I was doing this. I wish I had an opportunity to you know, fight in the UFC, or I wish I had an opportunity to do some other things. And you stop, and you don't stop to appreciate the benefit of the simple life. And I was in the same place, man. I was making a little bit of money, training twice a day, not really having to work very much. I'd work 2-3 hours a day training clients. And you almost take it for granted, because you're seeing, you know, where you could be going. And then you finally get there, and you're like, man, life was so much easier. It's so much better than, I got 3 kids now. I got a wife. I got a business. I got a gym. I've got online, all these things. And you're like, man, if it could only go back to what it was like 5 or 7 years ago, life was so easy. All I had to think about was training. And so for the listeners out there, that's a huge lesson, man, is don't think the grass is greener once you get there, because you need to stop and smell the roses, man.
No, and you know what? Honestly, the thing I learned from that is life stress is the number one thing that will derail an athlete. Or even if you look, I use the term athlete very broadly.
Yep.
The type of person that works a corporate job 60 hours a week, that's their biggest obstacle to getting fit.
Yep.
It's not the work in the gym, it's the stuff outside. And so you're right, like, that was one of the best times of my life and one of the easiest times to get good, because I had zero life stress and zero worry. The biggest concern of my day was my training.
Yep. Yeah, your biggest stress was like, you know, what girl you got on the go this weekend kind of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was it. And I even stayed away from dating girls at the time because I just wanted to focus on my sport. And so I was one track minded. It was great.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And this podcast is brought to you by ATP Labs. In honor of Bobby Maximus's podcast, I want to give you guys an opportunity to get one of ATP Labs' premier products. It's called IGF. And the reason it's called IGF is there's been some research that suggested optimizing your brain function can actually help increase IGF secretion when you're training. So this product is a really great pre-workout focus product. It's not going to be a tremendously stimulating product, but it's going to really, really help with focus. So this is the type of product I like to take maybe later in the day when I'm training. And I know that I'm going to be able to have to sleep a little bit later, or I'll combine it with a cup of coffee or something like that before I do my workout, because it's loaded with my favorite ingredient, which is alpha GPC. And I hope you guys enjoy. You can use code BPAK, B-P-A-K, on atplabs.com, A-T-P-L-A-B or L-A-B-S.com. Both of those will work. So enjoy the podcast with Bobby Maximus. So how did you make the shift from living in London, Ontario, doing kickboxing to ultimately transcending the ranks to the UFC? Because that's a huge thing, man. Like, we're just kind of brushing over that. Like, hey, I went to the UFC, but there's millions of people out there who would love to do that. And you had this opportunity. So talk about that, man. Because, like, you know, little Canadian boy, there's not very many little Canadian boys that make it as far as you did.
No, and you know, I appreciate you saying that. And here's the thing. I've got this whole platform I speak on where everything I've done has been built off my own back, where everything I've done has been constructed from the ground up and hard work. But the real truth is that there's a lot of people that have helped me along the way.
Yep.
And I was able to meet a guy named Sean Tompkins in London, and Sean died in 2012, which is really tragic. But there was a group of us, myself, Mark Hominick, Sammy Stout, Chris Horodecki, Nick Rondinelli, and we all, you know, made it really far in fighting. Nick was a Muay Thai world champion. Chris fought in all kinds of organizations. Mark and Sammy had stellar careers in the UFC. And I was really just in the right place at the right time. And I met these guys and we clicked. We trained together every day. we formed a deep friendship and a bond, and good things really just started to happen. And one of the biggest things that I believe in is you become who you hang around, or you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
So true.
And I want to call out somebody here in a positive way. His name's Mark Hominick.
Yep.
And Mark had a great career in the UFC, but Mark's the one who really showed me what hard work is. If there was one person in my life, if you were to ask me who's the hardest working person you ever met in your life, it's Mark. That guy had no off switch. And so being around that type of person just made me better. And so I was able to make the UFC because of the environment that I was in. And yes, I had to work hard myself. It wasn't as simple as hanging out with these guys and I got good.
Sure.
But being around those guys, it was a really good experience. And then further to that, when I moved to Toronto, there was a gentleman named Shaw Franco, who's another one of those figures in my life who he's kind of a father figure to me. And Shaw really helped take my fighting to the next level. And so I've just been so lucky in my life to be surrounded by some of the best people in the world. I wouldn't be here without them.
Man, I absolutely agree with you. I had people in my life like that who at the time you don't appreciate, and you look back at it, you're like, man, if it wasn't for that yep. little bit of them that I take with me everywhere I go, I wouldn't be half the man I am. And it's yep. such a beautiful thing to look back on and see the graces of God that got into your life and blessed you with this opportunity. Dude, obviously you worked your ass off, but you're also the type of person who would work their ass off, and you got this amazing opportunity put in front of you. So it's a pretty awesome thing.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, man, good for you. It's always great to see good Canadian boys making it far. So talking about your training now and how that led into creating a book with Men's Health. So I think that's awesome, first of all, because I'm sure there's a huge need for people to understand how to balance fighting training, which a lot of guys are doing, with fitness. So talk about, one, how that opportunity came to be and really what you're delivering in that book.
So, you know, the book's actually interesting. I think it's different than any other fitness book on the market because it's not really a book about fitness. It's a lot more, there's a lot more life psychology in there than people would anticipate.
So you wrote it yourself or you wrote it in combination with Men's Fitness?
I wrote it with a good friend of mine named Michael Easter.
Okay.
Who, he's been a writer for Men's Health for years.
Gotcha.
And we wrote it together. He was a co-author. It's awesome. It's my content, but he helped me form the words. It was such a great partnership because I've got an English degree in university.
Yep.
So the way I write in essay format that's not accessible to most people. It's right. just not something you'd enjoy necessarily reading.
Sure.
Michael is an expert at writing articles for Men's Health. Mm-hmm. And so distilling it in an easy to digest format. And so it was a really good partnership. Now, how the book started was I started writing articles for Men's Health online, and a lot of my articles were of the tone, it's going to take you 6 months, it's going to be really hard, there's no such thing as a free lunch, there's no pill that can help you. And they really didn't do that well at the start because right. it was different than what people promote, right?
Right.
Like we live in an era of 4 minute abs and 10 minute shoulders. And you know, from your experience, bodybuilders are some of the hardest working people I've ever met.
Yep.
You're not just going to get fit on 4 minutes a day. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
I mean, how many hours have you spent in the gym? It's countless.
Yep.
So my articles weren't doing well. And then they started to do well. And people started to really adopt this, we want real information attitude. And so the head of Rodale Press came to me that owns Men's Health. And they said, we want you to write the book that tells people the truth. And I said, okay. What are my parameters? And they said, no parameters, write what you want to write. And so I wrote a book that's part psychology, part nutrition, part recovery, and part training. And the first actually 70 pages of the book are all that life psychology stuff. And I really believe one of my biggest platforms is that the gym can make people's lives better. It can make them better fathers, better mothers, better at their jobs. And I've seen it, the confidence people get from losing 20 pounds, the yep. confidence people get from looking better. And it's confidence across the board, like their marriage improves, but they also have the courage to go into their boss and ask for the raise they deserve.
Yep.
And they also start performing better at work. And a bit about my background that I suppose everyone would be interested in, but your listeners especially. I was bullied really heavily until I was 15 years old. I had marker drawn on my face on the bus. I was a guy that when I first went to the weight room, I couldn't bench press a 45-pound bar.
Same like with me, man.
Yeah. I was the epitome of the 99-pound weakling.
Yeah.
And when I was in grade 9, I got beat up by some hockey bullies and they broke my collarbone.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, being from Northern Ontario, you played hockey and you were popular, or you didn't play hockey and you got picked on. And
what that city are you from, Rob?
Cape Royal, Ontario. It's okay. A super small city up north.
Okay.
And so on the bus ride, I mean, I used to get marker drawn on my face on a daily basis, and I used to have to wash it off before my mom would see it because she'd tell the other parents, and then I'd get beat up worse. And so I decided I didn't want to get beat up anymore. When these hockey bullies beat me up, they broke my collarbone. And I ended up joining the wrestling team. And my first year, I lost every single match. My second year, I only won one match, but I kept trying. And then I was lucky enough that our high school had a weight room. And there was a couple of teachers there that helped me. One was named Mr. Fox. The other one was named Mr. Vincey. And a couple of the older kids helped me as well. And I started getting bigger and stronger. And with that came a certain amount of confidence. Well, by the end of high school, I was one of the best wrestlers my school had ever had. In fact, being truthful, I was the best wrestler my region had ever produced. And that kind of propelled me on this career to university. And I was a stellar university wrestler. And then that kind of propelled me to kickboxing in the UFC. And so it set the table for the rest of my career. Now, one of the things that I tell people about is I've never been able to fully get over those first 15 years.
Right.
And I'll tell you a story. My first UFC fight, I was in the Mandalay Bay and I was backstage and I deserved to be there. I was a 3-time Canadian Jiu-Jitsu champion. I was second in the world for kickboxing. I almost made the Olympics for wrestling, but I was filled with a lot of self-doubt. And I had a lot of negative self-voices. Mm-hmm. I don't deserve to be here. I'm a small town kid from Canada. I'm going to get beat up. People aren't going to respect me. And I had all these thoughts in my head, and I ended up doing terrible in that fight. I ended up losing badly. And it was at that point I decided that training was a lot more than physical, because it wasn't a physical issue. It wasn't a skill issue. It was – the problem was my brain, space between my ears. And so I sought out a sports psychologist, and I was actually recommended to him by a couple of friends of mine, George St. Pierre, Tom Murphy, and Rich Franklin, said to go see him. And I started working with him, and we started doing – a lot of positive self-talk exercises and a lot of rewiring in my brain. Well, after doing that for 3 months, my next fight, I actually beat a guy who was 42-4. I was never supposed to win that fight, superior in every way. But before that fight, I was a confident person.
Can you talk to me about that, Rob? Because, you know, I mean, you and I are living in the same boat, and believe it or not, a lot of pro athletes are doing the same thing that we are. Just don't believe you have to be there. Flex Wheeler, the greatest bodybuilder of all time, arguably said the exact same thing on my podcast. He said, even when he was, you know, winning the Arnold Classics, he's like, what, really? Me? I shouldn't be here. Talk about what you did to overcome that, man, because I believe that the reason the people don't succeed in life is their self-limiting beliefs, their negative self-talk. So what were some of the things that this, if you wouldn't mind mentioning his name, if you want to mention his name, and then talking about what you guys did, because, man, that's such a powerful thing.
So I'll tell you the two things that changed my life, and they're things I actually recommend in my book. The first thing was every morning I would wake up and write down 5 reasons I was going to be successful. And so a lot of people don't realize the power of putting something into writing. And this works in inverse as well. If you were to sit down and have to write, I suck at bodybuilding, you probably wouldn't be able to write it down, because there's something about it that makes it real. You can tell yourself that in your head, but to write it down, you can't do it. On the other hand, you write something positive down, it becomes real and it becomes truthful.
Can you give me an example of what that is? So 5 reasons I'm going to be successful. Like what would it be?
Okay. So for me, one of the reasons would be I'm ranked 2nd in the world for kickboxing.
Okay.
I put in 6 hours a day of training. I work harder than anyone else I know. They've got to be truthful things. I've got 2 of the best coaches in the world. I have the best training partners in the world. Reasons why you are going to be successful, why you're going to win the fight, why the cute girl you like is going to say yes to you asking her out, why you're going to win a bodybuilding competition, why you're going to, I mean, really anything, why you're going to be a good parent.
Now, should it be about internal characteristics of you, or is it like I'm because my coach is great, or because I train at a great gym, or like?
It can be both.
Okay.
It just has to be something that accurately reflects why you're going to be successful.
Five.
So five of them every single morning. And the more thought you put into this, the better you're going to do. And over time, you remind yourself of your good points or about the good attributes that you possess within you. Now, the other thing I would do that's similar is the guy I worked with is named Brian Kane. Last name spelled C-A-I-N if you ever want to look him up.
Yep.
And he was a person that had me do this green light thought kind of experiment, I guess, if you will. And what he told me was that in everyone's brain, we have red light thoughts and green light thoughts. Red light thoughts are those thoughts that I thought in the Mandalay Bay. I'm not good enough to be here. I'm going to get beat up. I don't belong here. I'm from a small town, etc. And a lot of the thoughts that you mentioned Flex Wheeler had.
Mm-hmm.
The green light thoughts are the successful thoughts, so those good reasons why you're going to do well. The things like I'm second in the world for kickboxing. I'm a jiu-jitsu champion. I'm really good at wrestling. Those are my green light thoughts. And every pressure situation in life, your brain enters a negotiation with itself, and it's flooded with red and green lights. The goal for you as an athlete is to make the green light thoughts overwhelm the red light thoughts, and you want to win that mental negotiation. So what I did is I went to Office Depot and got a roll of green dots and stuck them everywhere, on my fridge, on my steering wheel, on my phone, on my computer, on my TV. And every time I saw a green light or a green dot, I had to consciously think something positive about myself. And you start to rewire yourself from a state of constant negative self-talk to constant positive self-talk. And it's incredible the effect that had on my career. The interesting thing, Ben, was that second fight where I was practicing that stuff, I won submission of the night in the UFC. I beat a guy I never should have beat. I had one of my best performances ever. And I believed I was cured. So I stopped doing it. My next fight, 3 months later, the same negative stuff happened and I lost battle. That was a lesson for me where this is going to be a lifetime thing. Like this is something I'm always going to have. I'm just going to have to manage. And so a lot of the book is dealing with self-imposed limitations, setting goals, believing in yourself, positive affirmation type stuff, because I believe that's the biggest thing that holds people back. I think we all have negative self-talk and we all have insecurities and we're scared to talk about it. And if you can address those and deal with them on a day-to-day basis, that will have a greater training effect than any exercise you could ever come up with.
Man, I have a very high level coaching program that I do, and our success rate is good. Our success rate is not, I mean, so everybody has a success, but like for my standards, I want everyone to have a world-class result,
yep,
physical and mental. And some people have such deep underlying negative beliefs about who they are that it almost seems like an impossibility. Nothing you do to their training, nothing you do to their nutrition will override that.
Nope.
So that's why I'm always looking for this system, like you say, that you learned from Brian Kane. Like, what can we do to these people that says, hey, you are not fat, you are not lazy, you are the, like, whatever the opposite is, right? Like, you are a successful person. Man, these things are so deep grained in some people that I get on the phone with them every week. And I'm like, all right, man, let's walk through this. What happened this week? And they go, by the end of the call, you're like, okay, I'm excited to do it again. But that only lasts a day. And then 2 days later, they're like, you say, unless you give them a system that has them every day looking at these green dots in the fridge and on their steering wheel, they're going to go within 24 to 48 hours, they're going to go right back to the negative self-talk, man. So that's a pretty powerful thing.
Yeah, and here's the key that I learned. You have to work on it every day. Like if you were raised a certain way and for 15 years of your life you had negative beliefs about yourself, you can't turn that off ever.
Right.
You have to work on it. And it's not going to be a class with you that's going to fix it. It's not going to be a class with me. What they call it in the world of psychology, because I also have a psychology degree, is self-work.
Yep.
And self-work is the hardest type of work to do.
Hell yeah.
And you've got to do it every single day. And people think they're going to read a self-help book and all of a sudden be better. No, not at all. It's why people can't help themselves. You've got to do it every single day. And I believe that. And so even now, I actually make green dots and I sell them. And they've got my little logo on them.
That's awesome.
And I give them out at seminars and stuff. But like these things are all over my house. My son uses them. He's 8 years old and they're in his room. And when he looks at it, he thinks good things about himself because it's hard to be an 8 year old at school. You get picked on, people call you names, you wear the wrong shirt to school, bad things happen. And so he's using this as a way to overcome his stuff. And so it's a very powerful tool for somebody of every age. And the two things I want to address here are, number one, no one's immune to this stuff. The best athletes in the world deal with this on a day-to-day basis. Yep. In fact, they deal with it more because if you're a LeBron James playing basketball, you're either ripped to shreds every day on ESPN or praised every day on ESPN. And it's a really hard world to live in.
Yep.
And the more pressure you have, the better you are at something, the louder these negative voices become. Like it's with success. My son's joking around right now because I've encountered a lot of what we call haters on the internet because the more successful you get, people take shots at you. And as much as I want to say it doesn't affect me or doesn't hurt me, I'm honest enough to say that it does sometimes.
Yeah.
And I try to not let it affect me. And so the first understanding is that every single person, no matter how successful they are, deals with this type of stuff. And then the second thing, like I said, is it's a lifelong journey. You've got to do this every single day.
Man, it's like working out, right? You can't expect to work out once and then you're going to be fit for the rest of your life. It's just like, it's got to keep going every day. You got to earn that right to live that life you want. And man, speaking about the haters online, obviously I'm in the same boat being a professional bodybuilder. I get a lot of that too. I think eventually I've learned to not take it personally. And the way I do it is you just try to put yourself in a position of where they are in their life. Like the type of person who's going to make a negative comment on your stuff, you wouldn't make a negative comment on somebody's stuff. So where are they in their life? And then you realize like, oh man, like I'm at the point now where I'd rather give these guys a hug than like take it personally. I'm like, oh man, I feel really bad for you. Like I can see where you are in your life. It's a really shitty place to be. And if I can ever help you, let me know. And dude, if I ever meet you in person, I'll shake your hand and give you a big hug. Have an awesome day. That's usually my response because I'm not going to take my time to put a negative comment on somebody's anything. So realistically, like, just got to think of the type of person and where they are in their life, man. And it'll probably make you feel a lot better about the fact that it's okay.
Yeah, I've learned a couple of things. One of the things I've learned from my success is that, number one, anyone who's negative to you, it's a reflection on them, not you.
Exactly.
That's the first thing.
Yep.
The second thing is until you have haters, you don't truly have success. I mean, the more successful you are, the more people are going to hate on you. And if no one's hating on you, you just aren't successful enough. And despite the fact that I believe that, it still affects me to some days though. Like there's some days I'd like to say it doesn't affect me and it doesn't, but there are other days it pisses me off. What I've learned to do with that anger is turn it into motivation as opposed to dwell on it or be negative about it. It's almost like a chip on my shoulder, Russell Westbrook, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan type attitude of, I'm going to show you. And it's like I said, it does affect you. And it's hard when your son reads it or your wife reads it. It's actually funny. My wife gets so angry about it. And it's funny because she just loves me to pieces and she's super defensive of me. Me, a lot of stuff I can brush off. She wants to get on a plane and go fight people. And I love it. It makes me laugh.
My wife's the same way, man. That's awesome. So during your journey, man, what was maybe the hardest thing for you to overcome? Obviously you had these issues with the negative self-talk, but you know, like I said, you know, a few minutes ago, getting to the UFC is no small feat. You had these great influencers. You talked about the hardest thing being outside of the gym, but what was the hardest thing in the gym? If there was one, like, was it, you know, did the path just kind of reveal itself to you? And it was just like, I just have to work hard and I'm going to get there. Cause I mean, like I said, there's millions of kids out there who want to make the UFC and I want them to have a path. I want them to have an idea of what it might look like, what your mindset looked like, and what your day-to-day path looked like to really get you to the top of the world. Because that's something that's overlooked a lot of the time. Is like, hey, if I want to be Rob McDonald and I want to be in the UFC, what's the plan? How the hell do I get there?
You know, the easy answer to that is lose the ego in the gym. And I say that, and it's not that I was cocky. It's not that I was arrogant. It's that I think I was too proud to work on my weaknesses. There was a time in my life where I just focused on the stuff that I was really good at. And I learned the hard way that I'd never be successful doing that. And so the hardest thing, listen, the reason why something's a weakness, it's because you don't like it. Like if you're the guy that loves to bench press, you're going to bench press every day and you're going to be good at it. If you hate squatting, well, you're not going to squat and then you look like the guy that skipped leg day. Well, it's the same thing with fighting. Like if I've got poor stand up or poor striking skills, I've got to learn how to strike even right. if I hate. And so what I learned to do is immerse myself in working on my weaknesses. And let me tell you, there was a lot of frustration, a lot of practices where I just wanted to quit. It became unenjoyable to a degree mm-hmm. because I wasn't working on the things that I really, really loved. But working on my weaknesses made me better. And so in the gym, I always made an attempt every single time I entered the gym, whether that be the fighting gym or the weight room, was to work on something I was not good at. That's the biggest advice I'd give anybody from a physical standpoint so that I didn't have any weaknesses anymore.
So a lot of people identify as being very, very lazy. Obviously, working on your weaknesses is one way, but what do you suggest to people who have a hard time working hard? Like, what do you recommend for people who have to overcome laziness?
You know, evaluate how bad you want something. In reality, life comes down to how bad you want it. And if you want something bad enough, you'll figure out a way. And so with laziness, it's really hard because I look at people that are lazy, not as lazy, but as that they just don't want whatever they say they want enough. Yep. And like I said, if you, you know, on an extreme example, if you have kids, if it was to save your kid's life, you'd figure out a way to make it happen.
Yep.
Because that's what real love is. Like you would just do it. If your kid's life depended on you making time every day to train, you would do it easily. But people don't because there's not enough of a consequence or not enough of a reward. So you just have to want it bad enough. And I wish I could teach people how to want something, but I can't. Comes from within.
What's your favorite way to get uncomfortable? Like how do you practice discipline with yourself?
I want to be the worst person in the room because that's how I'm going to improve.
Yeah.
And today, you know, there's a lot of negatives to social media. There's a lot of negatives to the internet, but there's also a lot of positives. And the positives are I can connect with great people all over the world and learn. And so one of the things I did, I visited Westside Barbell in August. Mm-hmm. And those guys are some of the strongest guys on the planet. And when you're I'm not a weakling. Like I can deadlift 600 pounds with no belt and no straps. I'm pretty strong, but I'm not deadlifting 900 pounds and 1,000 pounds. And so when I work with those guys, I was put in my place a little bit. It fuels me to get better and forces me to work on my weaknesses. Same thing with I've developed a friendship with three guys, John Bartolo, Tony Sentiment, and Branch Warren, who yep. are a crew of like really good guys.
Yep.
I ask them training questions and I follow them on Instagram and John and I talk on, you know, a fairly regular basis and I learn things from them and inspired from them. And Tommy Hackenbrook's a guy who lives in Salt Lake City, who is one of the best CrossFit competitors of all time. And I train with him, and working with an athlete like that puts me in my place. I work with a couple of NFL and NBA guys and I'm a guy trying to keep up with NFL speed. I can't, but it forces me to get better.
Good for you, man. So each of those obviously is going to make you extremely uncomfortable day to day though. You know, I'm a believer in do something that makes you uncomfortable every day and obviously being around somebody, but from a physical perspective, is there some part of your training that you really, you know, enter the hurt box, to use one of my friend's terms, like where do you really suffer?
You know, in terms of the gym, I try to do something every session that is mentally difficult for me, mm-hmm. that's psychologically difficult,
yep.
something that's not just physically easy. And usually that's something I'm not good at in terms of working the weaknesses. But the one suggestion I give people is your finisher. And so when I design a training session, you got your warm up, then you've got some structural work to balance yourself out. Then you've got your actual workout, which is whatever the goal of the day is. Maybe it's chest day or back day or it's deadlift day or squat day, but you're working on the thing. And then there's that little bit at the end I call the dessert or the finisher, yep, where you can have some fun. That's the time where I really try to crush myself or work on those weaknesses. And sometimes it's something I've come up with from my own twisted brain. Sometimes it's something I've seen on the internet that somebody else does that I will start practicing to make myself real uncomfortable. My favorite one lately, I'll tell you, it's from West Side Barbell. You lie down on a bench with 30-pound dumbbells, and you set a clock for 5 minutes. And for 5 minutes, your left hand stays in the low position with the dumbbell but an inch off your chest. And for 2.5 minutes, you bench press with the other side. If you have to rest, you rest at the top. At 2.5 minutes, you switch positions and repeat. So it's a 5-minute thing. And it's one of the hardest things I've ever done because it's a way to crush somebody with puny little 30-pound dumbbells. So there's not only a physical tax there, there's a psychological tax as well. So I do things like that to really crush myself. I also learn from people. Like, you know, another guy I really respect is C.T. Fletcher, and he's mm-hmm. always doing all kinds of crazy stuff on his Instagram and his website. And sometimes I'll try some of the things that those guys do. And if it's something you're not used to, it's pretty fucking bad. Let me tell you that. So that's the kind of stuff that I'll do.
Good for you, man. So what's next? I mean, I know you say you're training for potentially getting back to the World Championships, potentially getting back in the UFC. What's on tap for Big Bobby Max?
You know, I'm going to say this, and it's kind of a philosophical thing, but honestly, Ben, I just want to help as many people as possible.
Yeah, man.
I'll tell you an experience I had in my life. One of my fight trainers, Shaw Franco, he trained me for free, and I credit him with really resurrecting my fight career. I went through a period where I was having a rough time, and he really, really helped me. And he never charged me a cent. He just wanted to help me because he thought I was a good guy. And I asked him once how I could repay him, and he said, just do this for other people. And it was something I've always remembered. And here's a guy who's never made a ton of money. He's always put his students before himself. And it's something I believe in. And so for me, winning world championships, fighting in the UFC, writing a book, to me, it's all the same vehicle. It's just a vehicle to help other people achieve their best in life. That's what really makes me feel good. I actually recently have been working with a guy named Ben Sessions who has lost 120 pounds in 7 months. And it's really probably saved the guy's life. And that makes me better seeing him and his progress and how happy he is now. It means more to me than anything I've ever accomplished on my own. Seeing him succeed makes me feel good. And so I want to help as many people as possible. And the more successful I can get, the more people I can help, the more reach I have, the more people I can touch. So that's my real goal. Specifically, how I'm going to do that, I want to win world championships again. I want to fight in the UFC again. And I want to continue to build the brand of Bobby Maximus big enough that it has a chance to touch everybody.
Good for you, man. So what are some daily routines that you have attached to that make you successful? We talk a little about creating habits of success, and I'm sure you have some simple routines. Maybe you don't, but some simple routines that people can attach to that you believe make your day more productive.
Train every day. That's number one, because I believe it all starts in the gym. And a healthy body is a healthy mind as well. There's a mind-body link. And so every day, no matter what's going on, I make time for my own training. Pay yourself first. It helps me be more resilient to stress, and it helps me deal with the demands of the day. The second thing I do is I try to learn something new every single day, whether it's reading an Instagram post, reading a book. Not that I can finish a book in a day, but, you know, reading a chapter of a book, reading an article online, and in all kinds of different industries, because I've had to learn I've had to learn how to advertise, how to use Photoshop, how to make memes, how to run Instagram, how to do social media stuff, how to write better. Even something simple, like, it's funny that I'm on this podcast. I want to start my own podcast, but it's not as simple as just pushing go on your laptop. Making it happen, right?
Right.
There's a lot of work that goes into it. So I'm starting to research about that. So every day I try to learn something new that can help further my career. Mm-hmm. If you can get in those two routines, you'd be surprised the good things that'll happen.
Do you have any habits around sleep or meditation that help you perform at a better level? Because, I mean, part of my articulation of high level performances, you can only push as hard as you can recover from. And you know that, man. And we all push hard. We're also worried about gas pedal, gas pedal, gas pedal. But we need to sometimes worry about the brake, and sometimes we need to tune up the engine. So when you live in a world that's so fast paced, that's so caught up on pre-workouts and coffee and stimulants, what do you do to decompress and recover?
So a couple things with that. There's a big chapter in my book in recovery about stress management and sleep. Those are the two biggest things. First thing, I make sure I get 8 to 10 hours a night of sleep, no matter what is going on. I pay myself first, because the more well-rested I am, more I can do in the day following. I can just get more done. Mm-hmm. And if I'm well-rested, I have a lot of horsepower. I can answer a lot of emails. I can write. I can think. I can work out harder. And so I always make time to sleep. I never, ever, ever cut back on sleep. The second thing I do is I try to eliminate stress from my life. And it's almost impossible. There's always going to be stress, but I try to silence negative voices. I don't surround myself with negative people. I try to ignore things that stress me out, and I control the things I can control. Sadly, for most of us, stress is self-induced. And I'll give you an example about that I learned when I was in Toronto. I was a cop in Toronto for a number of years. And when I worked the day shift, if I left my house at 7 o'clock in the morning, I could barely get to work by 9. Like, you've been on the 401 in traffic. It's bad sometimes. If I left my house at 6:30, I was at work at 7, and I had 2 hours to train and hang out. So that was an easy choice for me. I just woke up at 6:30 and went to work.
Right.
So I was avoiding a stressful situation, i.e. the traffic jam. Well, I avoid stressful situations now to start managing my stress. And I suppose the third thing I do is every time I take time to myself every single day. It's important to take a little bit of time to meditate, to do visualization, to reconnect with yourself, to do something fun for yourself, to shut it down for a few minutes so you can be more productive in the next hour. So you'll rarely ever see me sit for more than an hour in front of a computer. I'll get up and do something for 5 minutes. I'll watch a show I like. I'll read a book. I'll walk with the dog. I'll play with my son, something to refresh myself.
Do you have your son in any type of the martial arts or any type of jiu-jitsu yet?
Yeah, my 8-year-old's in Taekwondo. Yep. He loves it. Yep. I actually wanted him in more of a traditional traditional martial art than the stuff I was into. Wrestling is more of a fight. That's how I got my start. I want him to learn to make eye contact, to bow, to be respectful. There's a whole part of his Taekwondo that's based on respect. And I like that. It's a good confidence builder for kids, but it's also a good life lessons. And so I've got him in that. And then my other son, well, he's one. So we train together at home sometimes. I'm joking, of course, yeah. But he will get into something, but I also don't want to be the dad that ever pushes him into something that I loved. And so if my son wants to try football, he plays football. If he wants to try soccer, he tries soccer. And so I'm open to letting him have a bunch of experiences, because I don't want to put my stuff onto him.
Cool, man. So one of my things that I really attach to with teaching my followers is how to be the greatest version of yourself. And that includes physical, that includes mental, but that also includes relationships and with your kids. How do you really connect with your kids on a day-to-day basis, a week-to-week basis? And how do you identify, or how do you define being a great dad?
So the way you connect with them, and this is something I do, and it's something else other people can do, kill all electronics. You know, the phone, the computer, the TV. And listen, sometimes I'm bad at this. I'm not trying to be hypocritical. It's hard when your income is made up to a degree from social media and things like that. And you understand that. Yeah. But if you can take an hour a day and put that stuff away and just talk to them and really connect on a one-to-one level, it will help your marriage. It'll help your relationships with your kids. Mm-hmm. Just without any outside distractions, ask them questions, ask them about their feelings, really just spend time with them. And that could be the drive home from school, where you just really have time to connect. So that's super, super important. The other thing is to just make sure at all avenues they come first, because at the end of the day, that's all you have in life. And so there are situations where I suppose I could go at night, but I don't because I want to spend time with my wife and my kids. I realize that home is where the heart is, and that's where things really, really matter. And it's all about putting in effort. Like anything, a relationship is work. Being a dad is work, and you've got to take that seriously, and you've got to put some effort into it. Approach it like you do your training. You're not just going to be a good dad because you have a kid. You've got to work at it. And so you've got to research the things that they're interested in. You've got to make an effort to connect with them. You've got to talk to them. You've got to even listen. When you've had a terrible day at work and you're stressed out and you've got a mountain of stuff in front of you to do, you still have to be able to shut down, turn that stuff off, and just be you at the end of the day. Yeah, and that's important to have that focus.
Yeah, I just did a podcast with a guy named Andy Murphy, who's a NLP master, and he's also just a master influencer of human psychology, and just talked about something as simple as anchoring yourself before you walked into that room, right? If you had a shitty day, put on a song that makes you laugh or a song that creates, yep, you know, something that makes you smile, something that makes you laugh, and all of a sudden, bang, you know, your psychology switches, and that's a huge lesson for everybody, man. Like, you can't walk into your house after you just had a shitty day at work. It's just a terrible thing to do, right?
No, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think that taking your stuff out on your kids or your wife is the worst thing you can do. Like, yeah, it's not their fault. My dad used to call it kick the cat syndrome.
Yeah.
Like, you come home, you're angry, so you kick the proverbial cat,
right,
if you will. And it never did anything to you. You're just pissed. It's not fair, and they sense it. So what I do is, it's actually funny you mentioned the song. I sit in my truck on the way home, listen to songs that cheer me up, make me feel good. Sometimes I'll go for a walk and recenter myself. Sometimes I'll just put myself in a positive headspace by using the green dot stuff. And then I just shut off and be good to the people that have supported me the most.
Man, you've got a hard battle, because I went through this once I had kids. My daughter was even worse than my son, from a perspective of, like, you have this beautiful little thing that you need to love and care for, and you have to come to the gym and be a ruthless animal. And learning to switch between those two was a big, big challenge for me to learn in the beginning. And I'm sure it's even more for you. Like, you know, you're getting ready to fight for world championships where it's literally like life and limb, and then go home and love on these little amazing humans. That's two very, very dichotomous avatars.
You know, to a degree, but I will tell you this. I'm at a bit different of a place in my life right now. I am so grateful to be where I am every single day. There's a lot of people that have this attitude about the gym needs to be about suffering. It needs to be about hard work. It needs to be this awful, dramatic mountain to climb with loud, angry music and hatred and all that stuff. And listen, man, if it wasn't for the gym, I wouldn't be where I am. If it wasn't for wrestling, I wouldn't be where I am. And I am so lucky to not have to sit at a desk 9 to 5 every day. I'm lucky to be doing something I love. I'm lucky to have found a way to monetize off something that started as a hobby. I mean, every day for me, I'm living a dream life. I wake up to a beautiful woman every day who loves me and supports me and who's loyal. I have two beautiful kids. We're healthy. I have nothing to complain about. And do I complain sometimes? Sure, everyone does. But the reality is, I really have no business complaining. And so when I get in those moods where I feel like it's me against the world, I try to remember two things. First of all, the whole world doesn't know who I am. It's not me against nothing. It's me against me. And then secondly, I should have fun doing stuff I really, really enjoy. That's the reality. I mean, there's a lot of guys I met who are training in the gym every day, training their ass off and not getting paid for it. I'm really lucky. And so by remembering that, it helps put things in perspective. I mean, even this podcast, it's kind of funny. I'm a fan of what you do. And when you contacted me, I was super excited to be on. And it's like, man, to have this opportunity, the fact that anyone wants to speak to me on a podcast is pretty cool. And so sometimes I'll talk to my friends back home. They're like, I can't believe you were on a podcast. And then it puts it in perspective where I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool. People want to talk to me. And so I try to remember that stuff and keep it lighthearted.
Man, you're doing awesome. And like I said, we all just – the fitness industry is so full of – it's so deep on shallow people, if you want to use a quote. There's so many people that are shallow. And when you find someone who's doing it from a perspective of legitimately trying to help people, and they're doing – you're also doing something great for yourself and your family, to me, that's – These are the type of people that I want to connect with. This is what the Muscle Expert Podcast is about, man. It's not about muscle. It's about like connecting with good people who are shifting the energy and the vibration of the world and influencing us to, you know, it's all about, you know, it's all about the psychology. And as you spoke about, man, if you're creating a war zone in the gym, what we teach at MI40 is everything that we do, you know, if you're an athlete, it's a different thing. But as someone who's trying to change your body, all you're trying to do is change your internal chemistry. So if I'm trying to create a response to build muscle, that's a specific internal stimulus. If I'm trying to create a fat loss effect, well, that's a different internal response I'm trying to generate. And if my brain isn't in the right space to create that internal response, it can't happen. So if my brain is stressed out, your body can't build muscle. It can't burn fat. Your body is more likely to injure itself just by changing your psychology, man. And that's so vital. So I'm so glad you brought that up.
Well, and it's just like I said, I had a situation a couple months ago where I was in, and I joke around with this, I was in a gym with an NBA player, one of the best golfers in the world, and an NFL guy. And like for a moment, I kind of stepped back and I just thought, how lucky am I right now? Like I remember in Toronto watching Vince Carter play basketball. And like I was a huge Raptors fan. Mm-hmm. To think I'm hanging out with one of these guys. Yep. Like, holy shit, this is awesome. And so I try to have that attitude. I try to have the attitude at 9 o'clock in the morning when I'm going to train and I'm a little pissed off or a little angry or I don't want to be there. Like the fact that I can work out from 9 till 11 every morning and then go to jiu-jitsu and I can call this work. Like I need to slap myself in the face and tell myself to take a seat because I am lucky and I am fortunate. And it's funny, when I am happy, when I am well balanced, when I appreciate the things I have, it's when I see the most success. It's never when I'm angry or down on myself or hard on myself. And there's this whole movement where just because you're angry and listen to loud metal doesn't mean you're any better than anybody, and it doesn't mean you're going to be successful. You can be successful and enjoy the hell out of it too.
Yeah, man, that's the life I'm trying to live. As a bodybuilder, like, you know, you grew up training. I mean, how much you follow bodybuilding, but growing up, I felt like it didn't have a positive influence in bodybuilding, man. There's a lot of guys who were just angry, a lot of guys who were pissed off, a lot of guys who had, like, the stoic look. And, you know, I'm trying to live that life of being a bodybuilder and teach people, hey, man, you can be a good human being. You can be nice to people. You can treat people well. You can have a smile on your face and still be excellent at your sport, which is what you're doing too, which is why I appreciate you, man.
Well, let me tell you, I'll tell you a funny story. I'm actually, bodybuilding is one of those things for me that a lot of people don't think I would appreciate it or respect it because I come from a functional background. But like anybody, my first book was the Arnold Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. I used to have Arnold posters on the wall. I used to love Dave Draper. When I went to the Arnold this year, like I was a fanboy because I got to meet – I mean, I'll tell you a crazy experience. I'm at a booth with Lalo Tactical. They're one of my sponsors. And the guy next to my booth looks really familiar. And he took off his shirt to change shirts. And he was probably the most ripped old man I've ever seen in my entire life. And it turns out it was Robbie Robinson. Oh my God. Like this is like the man. And I mean, you could argue he has the nicest biceps of all time.
Yeah.
And so I started talking to him. And then I met Flex Wheeler and I talked to him. And I met CT Fletcher and we started talking together. And I talked to Branch Warren and I met Rich Piana and you know, it's really sad kind of what happened to him. And I met Martin Ford and I met all these people. And you know what they all had in common? They were all just really nice guys to me.
Yep.
And that's like when you start to see like everyone's just a normal, nice dude that respects other people. And it was just a really cool reminder of why we're all really there. Like we're so lucky to be doing this and this whole anger image, like everyone's just nice and they shake your hand and they speak softly and they want to learn from you. And it's really cool.
Yeah, man. It's definitely I find you can have certain good experiences, and certain bad ones. And with the instant gratification world we live in, it seems like the perpetuation of the superficial people is getting brought to the surface much more. So hopefully just, you know, with the inevitable transparency of social media, hopefully the good people are at least able to rise to the top.
Well, they do. And remember this behind the logo, like I always joke about my logo. It's like a superhero logo. Like mm-hmm. I put on my Bobby Maximus shirt. It's kind of a Clark Kent Superman thing or a Bruce Wayne Batman thing. Mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I take that shirt off and I'm a normal person like everybody else. I'm no different than my neighbor across the street. And one of the biggest things I have, you know, to teach people is, and I'm sure you get it too, when you get the fanboys and they're kind of nervous around you.
Yep.
And sometimes I'll just stop them and I'll say, hey man, I'm a normal guy. You don't have to be nervous. Everyone starts somewhere. Like it's just part of breaking those barriers. And that's what I want everyone to remember. We're all just normal people. We're good at things. We're bad at things. We have strengths and weaknesses just the way it is.
Yeah, man. I love that. Man, so where can we send all of our listeners to learn more about you and follow some of your stuff?
Okay. So if you go to bobbymaximus.com, there's all kinds of articles on there, very similar to what's in my book. So it's really, really good. A lot of valuable stuff on there. And so I would go there. And I would also go to my Instagram, at Bobby Maximus. And from those portals, you'll find every single thing that I'm involved with.
Awesome. Can they get your book on Amazon?
No, not yet. So it's available only through Men's Health till about March at MaximusBody.com. They can order it through there. And then after that, it'll be available everywhere where books are sold.
Amazing, man. Dude, I really appreciate your time, and I'm really appreciating what you do, and hopefully we can continue to connect, and if ever I can help in any way, man, if I can help promote your book, I'm definitely behind what you're doing. So thank you, man, and continue to inspire us all.
Yeah, man, that would be great. And listen, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, I'm honored to be able to be on your podcast. I'm really appreciative of it. Anyone that thinks highly enough of me to have me on their thing, I'm just so grateful. So thank you.
Thanks, Bobby. Have yourself a great day, man, and hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
Cheers, Bob. Hey, I hope you enjoyed that podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Head on over to iTunes right now and leave me a review. Let me know if you loved it. Let me know if you absolutely hated it. Either way, I need to know so I can improve my job and bring you guys the best information with respect to muscle building, health optimization, and building a better person, building a better man. So thank you very much to our sponsors, which make this stuff possible. I'd love for you guys to each head over and check out atplab.com, ATP Labs, or ATP Lab. Either one works. ATP is a company I've recently aligned with because they have world-class manufacturing, and everything they do is third-party tested and proven to be what it is inside the bottle that it says it is on the label. And you guys know that's massive. And not only that, we're getting the best quality ingredients from anywhere in the world that provides them. Thank you also to Prime Fitness USA, the best equipment for someone looking to build muscle and make the most of their time. I chose to reach out to Prime personally. They never reached out to me. I reached out to them because I knew what they had, and I really believed in their product, and I brought every one of their pieces into my gym, and we still use them every day because, you know, we're all about mindful attention to detail. We are muscle intelligence. We are the ones teaching the best people in the world, the smartest people in the world, how to build muscle in the least amount of time. Another shout out to Gasp and Better Bodies for always taking great care of myself and my trainers and my staff. If you guys want to get a discount for Gasp Better Bodies, head over to bampakulski.com/podcasts and check out the show notes from this show and all the other shows, and you can find transcripts there as well. So have a wonderful day, upgrade your life, stay focused, and live a life of greatness.
Join us on BenPokulski.com to learn the cutting-edge techniques to take control of your body, your brain, and create your greatest life.